We're holding the last line of Hey Tess on with Baze. We're in the middle of dealing with the dinim of where the Torah says Lo Saxon Shor B'Dishoy. You're not allowed to muzzle an ox while it's threshing grain. We established that to a large extent, the dinim of that are similar to the dinim of a worker eating on the job, which was the subject of our Mishnah, which is why we're dealing in detail with that. So the Gemara says, turn it on bottom. Cows that are meraksos on grain. Now, meraksos can mean that it means that they're treading. Rashi explains that it means like this. We take, for example, barley, we soak it in water, and then we dry them in an oven. Afterwards, you have animals thresh them to get the shells off. What you're left with then is what's called elsewhere in the Gemara Choshla. So now, in other words, you're doing that processing in order to remove the shells. Now Tosfos also adds that it's going to be that afterwards you're not going to be using it to make bread, because then we learned before that's not nigma malach and machala, and you would be and the worker would be able to eat from it, and therefore you would have to let the animal eat from it. Rather, we're talking about where this grain, after it's made into chushla, after you go through this processing and are able to remove the shells, you're going to be using it, for example, you're going to dry it in an oven you're going to toast it in an oven, you're going to make from it a concoction called the Gemara Shossis, which is basically a drink containing flour. Whatever the case, the point is, in other words, that so according to Rashi and Tosfos, the vote is that it's already reached Gemar Malacha, and therefore, it's already reached Gemar Malacha as far as Meiser, so therefore the rules of a worker eating from it don't apply anymore, and therefore, as the Gemara is going to continue now, the rule that you have to let the animal eat from it, and you're not allowed to muzzle it, doesn't apply either, because as we said before, the two things go together. The Rambam has a different understanding of it, that Torah Samaraxis Betruah means that the animals are stepping on the grain, not because you put them there in order to thresh it, but because like they took a shortcut and they ended up trampling on the grain. Anyway, it continues the Gemara. The Hadoshis Petrumo Meiser, or where they're threshing in the normal way, but the produce that they're threshing is Trumo Meiser. So in all those cases, you are allowed to, now Trumo and Meiser, Rashi points out, normally you're not taking those until the grain has already been threshed. So if that's the case, then how are we talking about the animal threshing Truma and Meiser? So on the face of it, we have to be talking about, Rashi says, that Hikdima the Shibolin, that while it was still in the ears of grain before you threshed it and everything, is when you separated Truma and Meiser. The Gemara elsewhere talks about the idea a person might do that, and you have dinim of that in terms of whether in terms of, for example, the Levi coming and getting his Meiser first when he is and isn't chayiv to give the Kohen the Truma out of his portion. Yes, the Truma's Meiser, regardless. But anyway, the point is, it can happen that you separate Truma and Meiser while it's still on the stalks before it's been threshed. So Rashi explains that's what we're talking about over here. In any case, in all these cases, Eina over Meshumlo Bal Tachsom, in all these cases, he's not over on the Isser if he muzzles the ox. So in the case of the Meraxis Vitua, again, as Tosfos had clarified, since we're talking about over here where they've already reached Gemar Malacha, because again, you're not going to be making them into bread, then therefore the rules that we said before apply. The same way as a worker can't eat from it where it's detached from the ground and it's after Gemar Malacha, the same way the animal is not necessarily entitled to eat from it, and therefore you would be allowed to muzzle the animal and you're not over on Lysaxon. In the case of Truma and Meiser, the reason is because Rashi explains, where are we learning the whole concept that you have to let the animal eat? You can't muzzle it, because the Pasuk says Lysaxon Shor B'Dishoy, you're not allowed to muzzle the ox while it's threshing. Well, usually threshing does not involve Truma and Meiser, because again, usually Truma and Meiser are given only after Meruach, which is a much later stage. So even though in this particular case, we're talking about the person separated Truma and Meiser early, nevertheless, it actually says we can still learn from the word Dayish that it applies only to things that are usually done in the stage before Dayish, which is to exclude Truma and Meiser.
Did we try to prove from Kol V'Chomer that Behema Tachsom is for mechubar also.
So we said it. We ended up right. What we ended up saying is there's two different things. B'mechubar l'karka, when it's doing something that's attached to the ground, then both a person and an animal can eat. Ultimately, we said, never mind the kavachomers. We said we tried to learn things from kavachomers. Ultimately, we learned from a hekesh between the person and the animal. So there's two different things. Here we're talking about where it's already detached from the ground. You've already harvested it. Now you're in the process of threshing it. You're having the animal thresh it for you. So then that's when the pasuk is saying, like Sassim Shur Bedishoy, but Rashi explains that since Dayish usually implies that Truma and Meiser haven't been separated yet, because usually you do those only later, then therefore that would exclude Truma and Meiser from this rule. Tosfos disagrees with that and says that actually, because since the pasuk says Dishoy, it's threshing, that means something that's Rory to give to the animal. Truma, a Yisrael is not allowed to give to his animal. Even a Koyan is not allowed to give regular Truma to his animal, only as we're going to talk about in a minute, Kashinim, a type of bean, which are normally fed to animals. They're the Truma from those you're allowed to feed to animals because it is normal animal food, but not regular food, which is normally meant as human food. A Koyan wouldn't be allowed to, Tosfos points out. And as far as Meiser, we're going to talk about that. This is talking about Meiser Sheni, and therefore it's Mamon Gavoya, at least according to one opinion, and therefore, again, it's not yours to give to the animal. Whether, in fact, we're talking about over here about Meiser Rishon or Meiser Sheni, there are different opinions among the Rishonim, but Tosfos evidently learns that we're talking about Meiser Sheni over here. Anyway. So you're not over on Baltaxim. So again, according to Rashi and Tosfos, the Meraxis, the Tvua, is because it's already reached the stage of being Gmar Melacha LeMeiser, and by Truma and Meiser, because it's not in the category of Dayish, according to Rashi, or it's not in the category of Dishoy, according to Tosfos. Meanwhile, according to the Rambam, that Meraxis, the Tvua, means that they were walking, and they ended up stepping on the grain, then therefore, the idea is it's not something that you're not intending for them to do it, and therefore you're allowed. There's actually the Alter Rebbe discusses the point over there because it's Dover Shane Miskaven, there's a Sikha and Chelik Dalet actually, a Hadron on the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch, because these Dinim of Chassima are the very end of the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch, Choshen Mishpat, so the Rebbe in Tokshin Chav Gimel, the Alter Rebbe's 150th Yotzeit, made a Siyum on the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch in a Fabrengen, and it was published afterwards in Lekut HaSichas Chelik Dalet, and the Rebbe analyzes Alpi Alocha why that should be, why we don't take Psik Resha, and then the Rebbe ends up connecting it with the beginning of Shulchan Aruch about saying Moda'ani in the morning, the idea about Mitzvah Tzrichas Kavana, where here we're talking about whether Kavana is important or not. Anyway, Avu with name Marisa Ayin continues the Gemara. However, the fact is, you do have, well, at least when it comes to the Truma and Meiser, and according to Rashi and Tosfos, also when we're talking about the Meraxis Betvora, it looks like they're doing regular threshing, and people are going to see your animal muzzled, and they're going to think that you're over. Maybe boom, osamin. What you have to do is you take a fistful of that same kind of species. For example, if it's threshing wheat, then you take a fistful of wheat. Barley, you take a fistful of barley. Betolalov is traskel and shabapia. And you put that in the feed bag that's by the animal's mouth. So this way, in other words, the animal is not going to be eating from the actual grain that it's threshing for the various reasons that we discussed, but nevertheless, it will be able to eat from other, you're going to take other regular fulling grain, and you're going to put it in the feed bag, and it'll eat it back. Reb Shimon Yechoy says, you bring kashinim, which are a type of beans, Most of the time they're not human food. Most of the time they're used as animal food, but occasionally in a pinch we find in Shas people would eat them. Anyway, you bring these kashinim, but to the law, and you put those in the feed bag, shak kashinim, yofis, lominakol, because kashinim are better for the animal than anything else. It's a different opinions among Rishonim, is Reb Shimon Yechoy arguing with the Tanakama, where the Tanakama was saying that you give it the same species that it's eating, and Reb Shimon is saying don't give it that species, instead give it kashinim. Or is it that's how the Rosh learns versus the Ritva learns that Reb Shimon is saying that you don't need to put that kind of min, but you can choose to put Karshinim instead. Anyway, so the Gemara says Reb Min. Now, so you have like this. What have we said so far? That with, you have three cases: Meraxis Ritva. You have Meraxis Betvua, and you have where it's threshing Truma and Meiser. So Rimini, the Gemara says, I have a contradiction. Another Braisa says, Porasa Meraxis Betzvua, Eina Ova Mishum Baltachsim. When the animals are Meraxis on the grain, then you're not over on Baltachsim. So whether we're talking about, again, like Rashi and Tosfos say, that they're threshing it, not regular threshing, but just in order to remove the shells after the grain was soaked. Or according to the Rambam, where they happen to be walking over the grain without you having any intention for them to thresh the grain. So Eino Ovim Mishum Baltachsim, fine. That's the same as the previous Braisa. But the second Braisa continues, V'hadoshus B'Truma O'Maiser, but where they're threshing Truma and Maiser, you can't muzzle them. And if you do Ovim Mishum Baltachsim, then you are over on Baltachsim. And you'd be over for muzzling them. And the Braisa continues, V'nochri adosh v'parosish o'Yisrael. Now another din, if a goy is threshing using a Jew's cow, now if the Jew told him, Rashi explains, you can go ahead and muzzle my animal, and you can thresh your grain with that. So the Braisa says, Eina over mishum baltachson, then the yid is not going to be over on baltachson, which we're going to discuss in more detail later in the Gemara. But the flip side is if a yid were to be using a goy's animal to thresh and he were to need to muzzle it, he would be over on Baltachsen because the fact is he's the one who's doing the threshing. So we'll get to the matter of the goy and the yid later, but in any case, kasha truma truma, kasha meiser and meiser. You have a contradiction in the matter of truma and in the matter of meiser. The first braisa said that you're not over on baltachsim, and only because of marisa ayin give the animal some food to eat while it's threshing. And the second braisa is saying you are over. So the Gemara says bishlema truma truma like kasha. Really, when it comes to truma versus truma, there's no contradiction. Can the truma? Can be gedulei truma, because there's a difference between actual truma versus what grew from truma. Now you can have where you planted truma and it grew. So Rashi brings from a Gemara in Shabbos that this is one of those things where Beis Shammai outnumbered Beis Hillel and ended up and they voted and decided the din is that midrabanan that grain or whatever it is that grows from that is still considered truma, but it's only truma midrabanan. It's not daraisa anymore. So the first braisa is talking about actual truma. So you can't, so either according to Rashi, it's not included to begin with in the word dayish, or according to Tosfos, it's not part of dishoy because you're not allowed to feed it to the animal. So then you're allowed to muzzle the animal. As opposed to gedulei truma, when you planted truma, and it grew, so yes, it has a din of truma d'rabbanan, but nevertheless, you would still be over on baltachsim. To be sure, the Ritva points out, you still wouldn't be able to give it the actual grain itself that it's threshing, because the fact is it's still also d'rabbanan. But the point is, unlike in the previous case, where only marisa ayin, you have to give it like a fistful to be able to eat, here you would have to give it the actual proper amount that it would eat had it been normal grain, because after all, d'raisa it is chulin. It's only d'rabbanan that it's truma, and therefore you're going to have to give the animal that. So truma, there's no contradiction. Ela meiser and meiser kasha. What about though? How are you going to reconcile the two braises when it comes to meiser? B'chitema meiser and meiser namale kasha. Panma meiser kan b'gidule meiser. You're going to give the same answer that the second braise is talking about where you planted meiser. Doesn't work. B'shlemi gidule truma truma. When it comes to gidule truma, then midrabbanan it's considered truma. Like we said, Beis Shammai versus Beis Hillel, and the halacha in this is like Beis Shammai.
By the way, people usually don't plant truma.
People don't usually plant truma. The chachamim penalize. The Gemara explains in Shabbos over there. The chachamim were concerned, in particular, the koyin might keep around truma tmeya, for example, thinking I can't eat it, but I can plant it, and then he might up accidentally eating it, and then they ended up extending that in general to planting truma.
Truma can't plant truma tmeya.
So you can't plant truma tmeya, and in the end you can't. And if you plant truma tahora, then it has the din, ends up having the din of truma tahora. But meiser of gedulei meiser chulin ninu. The fact is, if you plant meiser, then it's considered chulin. The tnan, as in fact we learn in a Mishnah that says just that gedulei tevel gedulei meiser sheni chulin. If you plant tevel, even though it is true that the tevua contains chulin and contains truma and contains meiser in it, So nevertheless, though, and again, Rashi explains, normally, again, so what you have is, again, so you had miruach, at that point, it became chayav and truma and meiser. Instead of taking the grain and giving truma and meiser from it, instead you went and planted some of it before doing that. The fact is, when you plant wheat or any other kind of grain, the original seed rots away in the ground, and therefore it's bottled. When it comes to truma, you have the particular thing again, because you have the Kohen himself has truma tmeya. Rashi points out, based on that Gemara, also you have over there, you can have a concern that the Yisrael may keep the truma tahora and figure, why should I bother giving it to the Kohen? I might as well plant it. So therefore, the Chachamim are penalizing him and saying it's going to be truma anyhow, and you're not going to gain anything from planting it, because either way, one way or the other, you're going to have to give it to the Kohen.
But when it comes, always going to be truma.
It's always going to be truma. That's the point. Yeah. But when it comes to meiser, you don't have. When it comes to tevel, and when it comes to meiser, you don't have those considerations. So therefore, the Mishnah says that tevel and that the what grows from tevel and from meiser sheni is chulin. So there's no such thing as gedulei meiser to have an issue with that. So why is the second braisa talking about gedulei meiser where there's no chiddush? In other words, of course you can't muzzle the animal while it's threshing that. Anyway, it's chulin for you to eat. It's normal grain.
Is there a penalty to plant tevel, or do you have to take the truma and
meiser? Lachatchila, you should take the truma. But we're saying that chachamim are not penalizing you when you... Now, what it is elsewhere, in other places, we learned in Nedarim, we learned here and there in other places, when the tevel is something that doesn't rot away in the ground, but rather keeps on increasing, then that's different. Then you have complications. For example, onions. You plant an onion bulb in the ground, it doesn't rot away. Instead, it just keeps on growing new and new layers. There you have an issue because you have the gedulin are not necessarily mevatel, the original thing that was also. But here we're talking about wheat or barley or what have you, where they rot away in the ground, and a new plant develops from it. Then therefore the chachamim don't penalize. Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara answers Ella loy kasha. Rather, the answer is there's no contradiction between the two braises. Haba maisa rishon, haba maisa sheni. The difference is the second braisa is talking about maisa rishon. Well, maisa rishon, you're allowed to eat. You have to take out trumas maisa from it. But other than that, yeah, you have to give it to the levy. But the fact is that the fact is that it is mutter for zorim to eat. As opposed to maisa sheni, you have the rules outside your shalayim. You can't eat it, and therefore it can't be called dishay. Tosfos points out, by the way, now, when it comes to maisa sheni, again, we're not going to say that you're not allowed to plant it. The whole point is you might keep it around and then you want to use it when it's tuma. When it's tuma, why would you? If it's maisa sheni and it became tuma, you can redeem it and take the money to your shalayim. So therefore, the chum had no reason to impose any special rule over there. But again, now we're saying maisa rishon versus maisa sheni. So maisa sheni, you can't eat outside your shalayim. So therefore, you can't feed it to the animal either. And therefore you'd be able to muzzle the animal. Actually, the Ritva learns the other way around. Maisa rishon, you can't have the animal eat from it because it still contains the trumas maisa. Maisa sheni would be talking about in your shalayim where you're allowed to eat it, and therefore you're also allowed to feed it to the animal, and therefore you can't muzzle the animal. So that's one answer. The Gemara says, V'borisema, another answer, hova hov, maisa sheni, both brises can be talking about with maisa sheni, but like Tasha, hora meir, hora bihoda, where the two brises are appointed a meir and a bihoda respectively. Hora meir, dama maisa sheni mom and gavoyahu, the meir says, we learned in Kiddushin in particular, we learned about it in Baba Kama as well, not in Baba Kama, we learned actually about it in Or Masechta, in Perek HaZohav. Reb Meir holds that Maisa Sheni is Hashem's property. Hashem gives you permission to eat it in your Shalayim, or to redeem it and take the money to your Shalayim, etc. But it's not really considered yours. So therefore, it's not Dishoy, it's not yours. And therefore, you can't eat it, and therefore, you can't feed it to the animal. Where's the first braisa? Was according to Rabbi Yehuda. Dama maisa sheni mamon. Or second braisa is according to Rabbi Yehuda. Dama maisa sheni mamon hediyah. Rabbi Yehuda says that maisa sheni is mamon hediyah. It's considered yours, just like any other produce of yours. therefore you have to let the animal eat from it, and therefore if you want to prevent the animal from eating, then that's where the first braisa is saying that you're, so that's where the second braisa is saying that you can't muzzle it, you have to allow it to eat, and if you want to prevent it from eating, then you're going to have to put a proper amount in its feed bag. Rashi makes the point over here also, as far as truma then, what we can be talking about is, when we said before that with truma, you wouldn't be allowed to muzzle it. Let's say, for example, Rashi says the cow belonged to a Yisrael, and even if the Kohen is using the animal for threshing, then he's still not allowed to feed it truma, because the fact is the animal belongs to a Yisrael, so therefore that would be the case though, that he'd have to give the animal something else to eat so that it doesn't eat from this. Okay. So the Gemara says, Hefi Dami. Now, how do you anyway have, as we talked about at the top of the Amud, anyway, how do you have that you would have Truma and Meiser before threshing? You go and shake Dima B'Shibolin. So as we said, you're talking about where you gave the Truma or Meiser early while it was still in these stalks before it was threshed. Tosfos actually wonders why the Gemara left it until here. We've been talking since the top of the Omer about Truma and Maisa. Why didn't the Gemara earlier explain this point that Ikdima B'Shibolin? But in any case, that's. Okay. So the question is, Ulur of Yehuda, V'Hoboi Choyim. The question is, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, who holds that it's Mom and Head. You still have the Haboi Choyma, don't you have to bring it into the walls of your Shalayim for it to be mutter to eat? So what are we saying so far? We're saying that the lab of Lois Sachsoim overrides that rule, and therefore you're not allowed to muzzle the animal even though it's Maisa Shein. Because we're saying, according to him, it's Mom and Head yet, and therefore you can't muzzle the animal, and if you want to prevent it from eating, you can't. You can't muzzle it. If you want, you're going to have to put a large amount of food in its feed bag. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, anyway, though, you have and the fact is, when it comes to Maisa Sheni, you have also a loisesser to not eat it outside your shalayim. So how is the lav of loisachsim overriding the lav to not eat it outside your shalayim? So according to Rashi, the question is, how is the one lav doicha the other lav? The Meiri explains a little differently. He says that when it comes to Maisa Sheni, you have a mitzvah esseh and a loisesseh, and we know that a loisesseh can't be doicha an esseh and a loisesseh. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, why shouldn't you be able to muzzle the animal? The fact is that you're right now outside your shalayim, you have an issur to eat it. So the answer is to shadosh lifnim nechomes space pagi. You can answer that we're talking about he's actually threshing the grain within the walls of Beis Pagi. Beis Pagi is an area, is an extension of your shalayim. Rashi explains at one point, the Gemara in Shavuos tells us at great length, we'll learn about it sometime next year, Beis Hashem, about a whole process to enlarge the city of your shalayim and make that now you have extra areas that have the kedusha of your shalayim, and you have a whole ceremony with which that's done. Now that area is enclosed by a wall, and that area is called Beis Pagi. Rashi explains, we had at the beginning, near the beginning of the Masechta, we had Chamur Beis Pageha. We talked about a donkey and the reins that are attached to its head. We have the whole contraption of straps and whatever that make up part of the reins that surround the animal's head. And then you have the straps that stick out from that you lead the animal with. And that part that was on the animal's head is called Beis Pagi. So therefore, in the same way over here, Beis Pagi means an extension of your shalayim. Whatever the case, the point is that it's within the city of your shalayim, and therefore you are in fact allowed to eat it. So therefore, so now you don't have that issue that you can't eat it. Therefore, since Rabbi Yehuda holds it is mum and head yet, then therefore you would have to allow the animal to eat from it. Okay, the Gemara says you both say mum. Or I can give you another answer. So far we had two answers to reconcile the braises. We said that one's talking about mice. We said, as far as, As far as truma, we said one braisa can be talking about truma and the other one gedulei truma. As far as meiser, we said one can be talking about meiser rishon and the other meiser sheni, or one can be both talking about meiser sheni, but it's Rav Meir versus Rav Yehuda. And again, in the case of truma, we don't need all of that. We're talking about that truma versus gedulei truma. And again, with truma, you can't feed the animal even if it belongs, even if the kohen is the one doing the work. Unless the animal itself belongs to the kohen. So now the Ibori Sema, now we can give another answer to reconcile the two things as far as Meiser. Loikasha, Hol Kanma Meiser Vade, Kanma Meiser Dmai. Depends whether we're talking about Meiser Sheni, or Meiser Rishon for that matter, any Meiser of Vadai, where there you have, then you have to give it on a Doraisa level. Oh yeah, we are talking about Meiser Sheni. So Meiser Sheni, when it's Vadai, when you know it hasn't had Meiser taken from it, you definitely have to take Meiser Sheni from it, and then you have to take that to Yerushalayim. So that would be the case, then therefore where you're allowed to muzzle the animal, because again, you have to take it to Yerushalayim. You have to take the produce to Yerushalayim. And the Meiser Dmai, whereas the other Braise is talking about Meiser Dmai, so it's only Drabbanan that you have to give the Meiser in the first place, and therefore that doesn't override the Issur of Loisachsim, and you would have to let the animal eat. So the Gemara says, Hashta de Osis Lahochi. Well, actually, now that you reach that point, Truma, Truma, Nami, Laikasha, then you can use the same answer as far as Truma. All the other answers required us to distinguish between Truma and Meiser. Truma, we were talking about Truma versus Gidule Truma. Meiser, we were talking about Meiser Rishon versus Meiser Sheni, or within Meiser Sheni, Rabbi Yehuda versus Rabbi Meir. Now we can say that both Truma and Meiser, we can say, can the Truma Svadai, can the Truma Svadai. Depends whether we're talking about Truma of Vadai or of Dmai, and the two Braises would reflect that distinction. So the Gemara says, so what are you talking about? B'shlema Meiser Dmai Ikka. There is such a thing as Meiser of Dmai, because that's how it is. Dmai is that the Amei Oretz are not taking Meiser, and therefore you have to take Meiser. Some of them are not taking Meiser. It's not a majority. The Gemara in many places says, Roiv Amei Oretz Master Mehen, but you have enough of a Miyut Hamotsu. You have enough of a substantial enough minority of Amei Oretz who do not take Meiser, that therefore you have to, and that's where the whole concept of Dmai comes from. Is there such a thing as truma of dmai? V'hatanya, we learn in a brisa, afhu bitulos havidui. Also, the Mishnah at the end of Meiser Sheni discusses a number of takonis of Yochanan Kohen Gadol, and there's quite a bit of discussion who Yochanan Kohen Gadol was. Is he the father of Matisyahu, saying Alan Nissen, Matisyahu ben Yochanan Kohen Gadol, Hashmino Yovanov? So is he the father of Matisyahu? Matisyahu also had a son named Yochanan, so conceivably it could be him. He also had a grandson named Yochanan, who from historical sources, from Josephus, we know, ruled over Eretz Yisrael with the title of Kohen Gadol for 30 or so years, so maybe it means him. You also have, famously, where it says that Yochanan Kohen Gadol became a tzaduki after 80 years, is that the same Yochanan Kohen Gadol that we're talking about over here, or a different one? There's quite a lot of, we don't know a lot of these things. Yeah, quite a bit of ink has been spilled about all these details. Anyway, so Yochanan Kohen Gadol, the Mishnah mentions at the end of my session.
It was so obvious when they wrote this that they didn't even say it.
I guess so, yeah. At the end of Mishnayis Meiser Sheni, then it describes a number of takonis that Yochanan Kohen Gadol did, and now the Braise explains. It's also at the end of Masechta Soita, so those who are learning it for Sfira will get to it shortly before Shavuos. Afu Bitalos Avidui. On one of the things that Yochanan Kohen Gadol did is he was mevatel the Vidui Meiser. Like this, the Torah tells us that when you go in the fourth and seventh year of the Shemitah cycle, you make sure that all of your Meiser, all your Truma and Meiseris and Bikurim and everything have been given out to where they're supposed to be. And then you say Vidui Meiser, V'yarti HaKodesh Min HaBayis, as it says in Parshas Kisavai. But, what happened was that one of the psukim says they have agam nesativ la Levi. I've given the Meiser Rishon to the Levi a few generations before Yochanan Kohen Gadol. Ezra had made a takana, had penalized the Levium. We learned about this in Yevamos, that the Levium, very few of them, relatively speaking, had come to Eretz Yisrael to rebuild the second base of Mikdash, and therefore he penalized them. And there's different opinions in the Gemara of what the penalty was, but in any case, Meiser Rishon is either not being given to the Levium, or not being given exclusively to Levium, but also to Kohenim, and therefore Yochanan Kohen Gadol was saying, so now it's not correct to say the Gam Nesativ LaLevi, and therefore it was Mevatel Vidui Meiser. The gozer ala d'mai, and also he's the one who made the gzera on d'mai, that you buy produce. When I'm an artist, you have to take ma'aser. You have to take ma'aser from it.
Were the Rabbim were the ones that cut off their fingers also?
That's also the way they're the ones who cut. No, that's the same one. They did, some of them did cut off their thumbs back by Golos Babel, but now when they came to build the second Beis Mikdash, they needed Levim who were going to be able to play the instruments. Those Levim who had survived Golos Babel are not going to be able to. Among the younger Levim, very few came. You find them in the Psukim in Ezra and Nehemiah when it lists the people who came in the first wave of who came in the first wave to build the second Beis Mikdash. It mentions over there you have a couple of thousand Kohenim across four families over there. Meanwhile, you only have a couple of hundred Levim. And then later on, 20 odd years later, when Ezra is coming with his group to shore up Jewish life, strengthen Jewish life in Eretz Yisrael. Also, he says, I was checking among the people and I couldn't find any Bnei Levi among the people, and he actually had to send messengers back to Babel to tell them to send some Levim. So this is a Levim. We're not eager enough to come and build the second Beis Mikdash and then live in Eretz Yisrael. So the Gozer al Dmai, so also Yochanan Kohen Gadol is the one who made the Gzeira, who made the Takana about Dmai. What happened? He sent messengers throughout all the borders where Jews were living, throughout Eretz Yisrael. The Rosh, Elohim HaFish, and Avot Trumah G'dolah Bovam. He saw that the Amei Aretz are only separating Trumah G'dolah, but they're not separating Ma'aser Rishon or Ma'aser Sheni, and within Ma'aser Rishon also Trumas Ma'aser. The idea being, even the Amei Aretz knew that Truma, a person is chayiv misa for eating, and they're a zor is chayiv misa for eating, so therefore they were at least careful to separate Truma. Truma's Meiser has the same dinim, but one point is they figured that, the Levium can deal with Meiser Rishon, and therefore they can deal with Truma's Meiser. We don't have to deal with it. In any case, there's also a point that Meiri elsewhere also makes a point that Truma Gdola is a very little amount. Midaraisa, you can have one grain of wheat to pater the whole pile of wheat. Even Midarabanan, you only need to give 1/60th, so it's not very much, whereas Truma Smeiser is more, and therefore they didn't like the idea of having to give it. The point being, in other words, so there's no such thing as Truma when it comes to Dmai, because when you buy Dmai, by definition, Truma's already been taken. So Elo Loi Kasha Kam the Truma Smeiser Vade Kam the Truma Smeiser Dmai. So you're right, we're not talking about regular Truma Gdola, rather we're talking about Truma Smeiser. You can have the two Brises, we can say, where again, one says that you can muzzle the animal, and the other one says you can't. One's talking about Truma Smeiser of Vadai, where it's Vadai that you as a Yisro can't eat it and can't feed it to your animals, and even as Tosfos points out, even the Koyan really wouldn't be able to if it's something that's normally eaten by people, versus the second braisa that says that you can't muzzle the animals, talking about Trumas Meiser of Dmai, you have to take it. Midirabanan, but that can't override the Issur Min HaTorah of Loisaks. Okay. So several different possibilities when we say that you're allowed versus not allowed to muzzle the animal when it comes to Truma and Meiser. Okay. The Gemara says, Bo Mine Mir of Sheshes. They asked Rav Sheshes the question, Hoysa Oich Teles Umatrezes. What about if the animal
Alexander,
is what? Yeah.
It's still very problematic that a brisa contradicts the Torah, the Gzeres HaKasu. How do you explain that?
No, listen, the Torah says Lo Saxon Shor B'Dishon. The Braisa is explaining for us that when it comes to Truma, or Trumas Meiser, which is Min HaTorah, then that overrides the issue of Lo Saxon, either because, as Rashi said to begin with, when the Torah says Dishoy, implies something which normally takes place only before the Dayish, only before the threshing is done, and Truma and Meiser are usually taken after that. So therefore, the word Dishoy itself would exclude Truma and Meiser, or according to Tosfos, because the word dishoy implies something that you would be allowed to eat from, and or that you're allowed to feed your animal, and truma, you're not allowed to. So when you have an isur daraisa on this produce, then the din of lo saxem applies, and you're allowed to muzzle the animal. However, then because of maris ayin, then you should put a little bit in the feed bag. When the isur is only derabbanan, the chachamim cannot override a din min haTorah of lo saxem. Therefore, you can't muzzle the animal at all. And if you want to keep the animal from eating it, you're going to have to take other steps, as we're going to talk about on Amud Beis, other possible steps that you could do to prevent the animal from, to make it that the animal is not going to want to eat from it, but not that you can actually muzzle it. So it's not the Braisa contradicting the Pasuk, as usual with Braisa. It's explaining the parameters of the din that it says in the Pasuk that the Torah Shabbat Peh is all about. Okay.
It's a stretch. I don't know.
And that's not a stretch, because that's what we're saying. The word Disha implies something. The word Disha is coming to exclude certain things, and this is what it's coming to exclude. Okay.
That's the Braisa that says that. The Torah doesn't say that.
The Torah doesn't say a lot of things. The Torah doesn't tell us the shape of tefillin either. The Torah doesn't tell us how to shecht either. Right. And that's what we have a Torah Shabbat Peh for. All right, let's go.
Well,
bigger stretch.
Yes. Okay. Let's go. Bo mi name Rav Sheshes. Hoisa is chelas matrezas mabu. They asked Rav Sheshes, what about if the animal is going to be eating from the grain and then it's going to be having diarrhea? So in other words, the eating this grain is going to give it digestive problems. So mahu, what would be the din? Are you allowed to muzzle in that case? Even nowadays, by the way, you can look up and find from various animal husbandry groups or whatever that they warn giving too much wheat to your animals is likely to cause them digestive problems. It ferments too quickly in their gut, whatever. Anyway, so what would be the din? Is it mishum de mali lahu? Is it fundamentally the idea behind why the Torah doesn't want you to muzzle the animal is because it's good for the animal to be able to eat from what it's working with? In this case, v'halei mali lahu. In this case, it's not. It's bad for the animal's health. Or maybe the consideration is
pain.
That the animal is going to be in pain. And it's in its little animal brain. It's going to be thinking, oh, there's all this food in front of me. Why can't I eat any from it? Well, the Hochazio Mitzdara, in that case, you, it's seeing it, and it's having that side. It doesn't know to put cause and effect together that if I eat this, it's going to give me digestive problems. So what would be the din? Omelahu Rav Sheshes Tinisua. So Rav Sheshes answers them on the basis of the Braisa that we said at the top of the Omelah, Rav Shim Ben Yechoyim, and maybe Karshinim, but Torah Law, where Rav Shim Ben Yechoyim said that when you have a case where the animal is threshing something which would be usur for you to feed it, for example, we said Truma and Meiser, then you take some karshinim, you take some of these beans of a certain type of beans, which are usually used as animal food, but tolala, and you hang it in the animal's feed bag, shakashinim yofas laminakol, because those are better for the animal, they're healthier for the animal than anything else.
And the animals like healthy food.
Well, shmaminim, shum demali lahu. So you see, the fundamental idea is that you want something that's healthy for the animal, so therefore, in this case, where it's unhealthy for it, then you would be allowed to muzzle it. In fact, Tosfos says, it was only Rav Shimon Yochai saying this. Nevertheless, the Chachamim are not disagreeing with this point of we discussed before, is Rav Shimon Yochai arguing with the Chachamim when he mentions Karshinim, or is he augmenting what they're saying? Instead of Oisamin, instead you could give them Karshinim, but even if we say he's arguing, nevertheless, the Chachamim do agree with the fact is that Karshinim are better for it. So therefore we see that the basic idea is you want what's good for the animal, what's healthy for the animal, and if it's unhealthy for it, then you are allowed to muzzle it. So in that case, you would be allowed to. You, by all means, give it karshinim to avoid its tsar, but you would be allowed to muzzle it to prevent it from eating this grain and ending up with digestive problems.
You fill it up on karshinim.
You fill it up on karshinim beforehand, and that would be it. Okay. Now we have another question. Which again we're going to bring the Braisa from before as a proof one way or the other. Is a person allowed to tell a goy, you muzzle my ox and you thresh your grain? So that's a point of Rashi. So in other words, a point of Rashi, the vote would be, Marsha explains that in other words, you certainly wouldn't be allowed to tell the goy to thresh my grain with the animal muzzled, because the fact is it's my ox and my grain, and you're only having the goy do the work, and there's no question that would be also. The question would be, though, if the goy wants to thresh his own grain, so the grain belongs to the goy, and the work is being done by the goy, and only you are, and it's your cow, so that's the question. According to Tosfos, actually learns the other way around. Tosfos learns the other way around that we're talking about the other way around. If the goy is threshing his own grain, there's no question that it's mutter. The question would be, what about if he's threshing the Jew's grain? Anyway, so the question is, are you allowed? Now, we have the famous concept in Hilchos Shabbos of Amir al-Nochri, that you're not allowed to tell a goy to do malacha for you on Shabbos that you yourself wouldn't be able to. Maybe Hani Milin in Shabbos, maybe that's only specifically when it comes to Shabbos, which is more chomer, the Issus Skila, because after all, Shabbos involves a potential Issus Skila. Avachasima the Issu Lab, but when it comes to Loisachsim Shobedishoy, which is only a Lab, and the maximum penalty is Malchus, Loi, maybe there's no Issu. Maybe there's no issue of Amir al-Nochri. Tosfos points out, by the way, we do find there is an issue of Amir al-Nochri when it comes to Shmita and when it comes to Chol HaMoed, but there Tosfos says Shabbos and Yom Tov are all considered one thing. Meaning the Maharam explained they're all that Yom Tov Shvius is called Shabbos, Shabbos Lashem, like we had in last week's parasha. And when it comes to Chol HaMoed and Yom Tov, they're close enough to Shabbos that the Chachamim found reason to make a gzera on it. Anyway, but here the question is Chasima, which has on the face of it nothing to do with Shabbos, so maybe therefore it should be allowed. Maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe Amir al-Nochri applies across the board to all kinds of Isurim. So the Gemara says Toshma, let's bring from the Braisa before. So we said Nochri Adosh Porosish Yisrael, when a goy is threshing using a Jew's cow, Eina over Mishum Baltachsen, then the Yisrael is not over on Baltachsen, implying Mevahu Deloy over, he may not be over on the Isur Lav and Chayav Malkus, or Isura Ita. It sounds though like the implication is that there is an Isur to do that. What would be the Isur? The Isur Medir Abban of Amir al-Nochri. The whole concept of Amir al-Nochri is Medir Abban. The Gemara says, no, Bidinhu di Surah Nami Lekka. No, actually, the Braisa may mean that there's no Issa Drabbonin at all, but I did the Tona Sefer, the Yisrael Adosh Poros HaShanochri, over, because in the Sefer, it has to mention that if Yisrael is using using the goy's cow and threshes with it and muzzles it, then he is over, and there it's clear he's over because the Yisrael is doing the work and he's threshing his own grain. So there it has to say over, Tona Reisha ain't over. Therefore, you could say the Reisha uses the expression ain't over, even though in fact maybe he is completely mutter to do it. So you can't prove from that Braisa one way or the other about this matter of Amir al-Nochri. So the Gemara says Toshma the Shochulei la'avur de Shmuel. So let's try to bring another proof. They sent a message from Eretz Yisrael to Shmuel's father. Avur de Shmuel was in his times a distinguished Talmid Chacham in Bavel. He's known as Avur de Shmuel for one thing, because his son Shmuel ended up being far much greater and much more famous than him. But nevertheless, he was a distinguished Talmid Chacham and Rav in his times.
Do we know his name?
He's mentioned in the Gemara elsewhere as Abba bar Abba. So his name was Abba bar Abba, but he's better known in Shas as Avur de Shmuel. There's a long story in it, which I think we've told in this shiur before, the Goyim tell a story that he was one time away on a trip, and a Goyish lady propositioned him to be Mizana with her because she was able to see with her stargazing that night he's destined to father a child who's going to be a very great person, and she wanted to be the mother of that child. He uses the name of Hashem to transport himself immediately back to Nahudah to have relations with his wife that night, so that way the child will be from her. Then he leaves back to go on his business trip. They didn't know that he had been in town. Later on, when she's pregnant, then people thought that there was something wrong over here because they knew he'd been out of town for a while. Akitzer, anyway, eventually, once he came back, everything was straightened out, and from then on, they called him Avur de Shmuel in token of that we know for sure he is this child's father, and all of these rumors that were being spread around are not true. Anyway, so they sent this message to Avur de Shmuel. Halein Tovi, as far as these oxen, the Ganvin Armoi, Goyim steal them from Jews, or Menagchin Yosain, and they castrate them, and then they return them to the owner. Now Rashi explains, in other words, what happens like this. The Goy knows that the Yid is not allowed to castrate an animal. We have in Parashas Emor, over Arzchem, Loisasu, we learn that there's an Isser on castrating animals or people. Now, the Goy know, though, that an animal that's been castrated is better for work. It's stronger. So now the Goyim are kind of doing a favor for the Jews. They're pretending to steal the animals, they're castrating them, and then they're returning them to the owners. So now the question is, Is that allowed? Are we allowed to? So if the guy actually did it without the yid knowing at all, Tosfos, by the way, brings from Shilta Stid Abachoy how the goyim would do that. Tosfos brings from Shilta Stid Abachoy goyim. What they would do is they would tie a dinner to very tightly to that part of the animal. Then the goy would come and say, "Hey, there's a coin over there. I want to steal it." And then he's yanking off also that part of the animal. Although Tosfos says the expression of the Gemara over here, Ganvin, doesn't really suggest that. But in any case, the point is they did this kind of trickery in order to castrate the animals. So if the yid didn't know at all that this was going on, then fine, there's no problem. But here the yid knows that it's going on, and therefore, what's the din? Sholach lehu, savur d'shmol, answer them. Harama is avid behu. They've used a trick like that. They're kind of allowing the goy to do that. Therefore, arimu alaihu. Therefore, you should make a harama against them, and you bought the dinim in Eretz Yisrael should penalize them. These dabnun that now they're going to have to sell those animals instead of the this way the Yisrael won't have hana from the avera. He wanted to do it so that it'll be better for plowing with. Now he's going to be penalized that he himself is not going to be able to plow with it. So
better for plowing with, because they just are more focused.
And then maybe because they're more focused, maybe whatever it is, yeah. Anyway, the point is, don't we see from there that Amir al-Akum applies also to areas outside of Hilchos Shabbos and related things? However, Amar Papa, but Papa says that's not really approved. B'nei Ma'arobi Savri Lakir Abchidka, because the people of Eretz Yisrael may have held to begin with like Rav Chidka, he holds in the Gemara in Sanhedrin that which we'll learn next year, Bez Hashem, which discusses in detail all the Shev Mitzvot Bnei Noach. But Rav Chidka holds on top of the famous Shev Mitzvot Bnei Noach, he holds goyim are also to castrate animals as well. So there's not just that issue of a middle akum, there's an issue of that you're causing that when you tell the goy or connive at the goy doing this, then you're being over on lifnei iver. So on the other hand, for example, when it comes to loisachsim, which definitely does not apply to goyim, then maybe there's no issue. So the Gemara says, Sovar Rovel Meimar. So in this connection, let's finish off this point about this case with the animals that were being castrated. So Sovar Rovel Meimar, Rova thought to say, when we say that we have to sell them, that Avor Shmuel is saying, you have to sell them, Yimachu L'Shchita. It would mean they have to be sold, and then the buyer, in order that the buyer was going to shech them. Because otherwise it comes out that another Yisrael is benefiting from what was done. Or for that matter, the yid himself, who it was done for, is benefiting because a castrated animal is worth more. Because again, it does better work. So therefore, so Rava was thinking that the penalty is that you make him sell it just for meat. But Abaya says, "Dayin shekanasta aleihem mechira." No, it's enough that you penalize them and make them have to sell it. You don't, on top of that, have to have that they have to sell it for the other guy to share. So he's allowed to sell it to somebody else who will use it for plowing, who will use it for farm work. To that extent, we don't penalize him. Well, the Gemara says, "Pshita bnei gadol ki acher dami." Now, there's no question in that connection if you're going to sell the animal to your older son. So then the older son is considered like somebody else. So therefore, you can get around the issur by selling it to him. Bnei katan mai. What about if your child is a katan? Would the same thing apply? So Rav Achi also, but Rav Ashi shorin. So there you have machlokas Rav Achi and Rav Ashi where this type of thing is allowed. And the Gemara finishes off. Maremo mazutro ba'amri lohanu tre chasidi. Maremo mazutro, or some say two chasidim whose names aren't given. Machlofi ahadori. They would trade such animals with one another. Meaning, in other words, now Tosfos says in their case it was actually shalomi daitan. Unlike the Bnei Ma'arova, we were saying where they connived at it, they knew what the goy is doing, and they just like pretended they didn't know. Here, Marema or Mazutra, or the two chassidim, truly did not know. Nevertheless, people are not going to know, people are not going to believe that it was Shalemi Daitam, or people are going to think that you're allowed to tell a goy to do that. So they would be machma on themselves. What they did is they would trade such animals to one another. So Marema would have an animal where a goy had done this to. Mazutra would have an animal, same thing. They would trade the animals with each other. That way, they're still being makayim, what Avor Shmuel said, that you have to give it to somebody else or sell it to somebody else, but nevertheless, they haven't lost out from it. So in the end, the Gemara has not really answered the question about whether you're allowed to tell the goy to do, whether you're allowed to give permission to the goy to be choisim the animal or not. And in fact, there is machlokas rishonim on this question. Ultimately, has the Gemara concluded that it is allowed, or has the Gemara concluded that it is allowed, or is it not? Many of the rishonim say that since the Gemara has left the question open, then we have to be machmir because of the suffix. On the other hand, the fact is it's only a suffix dirabanan. So maybe therefore that would be reason to be makel. So the bottom line, as far as the castration, so in Shulchan Aruch, when it talks about that, you're not allowed to tell the goy to do it, but if he did it on his own, that's mutter, and if you have harama over here, then we make him sell it to another yid. And there also you have the Ravid is makel on that because he says that it's only since the Gemara had mentioned that there's the opinion of Reb Chivka who says that it's also for goyim and therefore it would be an issur of lifnei iver. The fact is the halacha is not like Reb Chivka. Goyim are allowed to castrate animals, so therefore it might be mutter. But on the other hand, many of the poskim say that not. You have to be machmer on that.
How did a Jew castrate a cat? Is there a way to do that?
So again, as far as pets, you can't really. A yid would not be allowed to. You can buy them already
right,
spayed
okay,
or neutered. That's
that?
Different. But other than that, once it belongs to you, then you can't do that. As far as the chasima, the accepted halacha is that you can't tell the goy to do that because we are about to ever brings at the end of Shulchan Aruch based on earlier poskim. Ultimately, what we say is that we say that the concept of hamidul anachri applies not only to Hilchos Shabbos, it applies to cases like this as well.
Okay. And that's what the Alter Rebbe says.
That's how the Alter Rebbe says.
Is it in his Hilchos Amirla?
No. So, well, he mentions it in Hilchos Shabbos briefly, but it's mainly at the end of Chosh and Mishpat. You have Hilchos Sheila, Chilas Vachasima, and the last siman of it talks about the last few halachas of it talk about the dinim of Chasima, and then he finishes off with that. That's like the next to last halacha there. Okay. Continue the Gemara. Boy Romi Bachoma. Rami Bahama asks the question, what about if you put a thorn into the animal's mouth to prevent it from eating? Mahu, what would be the din? He's like, what do you mean? If you actually put the thorn in there deliberately, Kasima Mal, you see, that's a full-fledged Kasima. Obviously, that's obviously no different than putting a muzzle on the animal. Ella, rather, Rami Bahama's question is, Yoshav Lakoitz Bafia Mahu. What happens if a thorn got stuck in its mouth? Are you obligated to take that out before you have the animal start threshing? So the question is now Tosfos says it's one thing when you muzzled it deliberately in order that it shouldn't eat, then further down on the Omer is going to say you can't thresh with it while it's still muzzled. But here, since the thorn got stuck in there by itself, maybe it's not considered, maybe it's the equivalent of the animal being sick. You're not obligated. If the animal's sick, you're still allowed to have it work, even though it doesn't just have an appetite. So maybe the same thing would be mutter over here. And then we have other questions. What happens if you, Rami Bachama asked, If you make a lion sit right outside the area so that the animal will be scared and so that the cow will be scared and it won't want to eat. So again, the Gemara asks, the Gemara asks, what do you mean? You deliberately have the lion crouch over there. Again, Chasima Maliasi, isn't that full-fledged Chasima? Because you're directly causing the animal to not eat. Ella, rather, again, the question is, what happens if an animal itself, the lion itself, is crouching out there? Are you responsible to make sure that it gets out of there before you start the threshing? Or maybe it's not your concern since you didn't bring it over there. Tosfos explains that this is kind of an intimate Saloma. The Gemara has not specified in Tim Saloma, but that's what it is. When it comes to the thorn, you could say it's in its goof, but the Ari is far away, so maybe it's not considered Chasima. Imtim Salama means if you're going to say in the case of the thorn that either way he can't, whether he put the thorn in or not, because the fact is it's something in the goof of the animal, but maybe a lion is different because not in its goof.
Oh, right.
And then similarly, continues the Gemara, Hamid Bnom Machutz Mahu. What about if he made the animal's baby stand outside? So therefore, so, uh, So in other words, like the animal now misses its child, it wants to go to it, and because of that, it doesn't have an appetite to eat now because it's concerned for its child. So what would be the din? So what would be the din with that? And again, hamid would mean maybe not necessarily, because then you'd have also be considered chasima. Maybe the gusa is supposed to be omad. Tosfos brings both gusas. Really, actually, the Gemara is not asking, because it's one thing when the animal is afraid, because for example, the lion is not going to eat at all, as opposed to omad b'nami machutz, it's not going to not eat at all. It's just going to be less likely. So therefore, so even hamid b'nami machutz, maybe we could say is still allowed, or maybe not. Also, hoiset smei lamayim. What about if the animal is thirsty and therefore it's not eating because of its thirst? But again, you're not physically preventing it from eating. It's just hardly, it's less likely to eat because it's thirsty. So what would be the din of all those things? Do you have to, in that case, would you have to give the animal to drink first before you have it, fresh? Another question. What would happen if you take a leather cover and spread it over the grain that it's threshing? So the animal won't see what it's threshing, but the fact is it is threshing it under the cover. So would the din of Lysaxam Shorbadisha apply in that case? So it doesn't see anything now. And on Amud Aleph, we talk about the question, is the fundamental thing, the tsar of the animal, or what's healthy for the animal. We established that what's important is what's healthy for the animal. So Marsha points out, nevertheless, you could still say the question is more whether it's considered disha. Is that actually considered threshing when it's under a cover? So you have that question as well. So a bunch of questions. The Gemara says, Pshot Mehochoda. Out of all these questions, at least we can answer one of them. Based on a braisa, the Tanya, Rashoi Bal Pora Lahari Porosi, the owner of the cow, which he's, for example, renting out his animal to somebody else to thresh with it, the owner of the animal, now he would like, obviously, that the animal should eat as much as possible from what the other guy is going to be doing the work with, because that way he doesn't have to feed the animal. So he would be allowed, Lahari Porosi, to keep the animal hungry before he rents it out. So this way later on, when the Reuven owns the animal, he's going to rent it out to Shimon. So he would like that it'll eat, that if it's going to fill up, let it fill up on Shimon's food rather than Reuven having to supply food, so he can make the animal hungry before he rents it out to Shimon. So that way it'll eat a lot of Shimon's. But I'll show you Balabayas and vice versa. Shimon can do the other way. When Mahatu Kia Omer lifting a behemoth, he can untie a bundle of straw in front of the animal, Me'ikra, before it starts threshing. So that it won't eat very much this way. It'll fill itself up on the straw and it won't eat much of the grain. So either one of them are allowed to do those kind of things. Now, the Gemara is assuming, Lahat of Kia Omer, the Gemara is assuming it means that what you're doing is you're taking the straw and spreading it over the grain, which is the equivalent of a katalia. So therefore that would answer that question. But the Gemara says no. Shiny hosam to ka'ochwa. First of all, the difference is because there the animal can eat the straw. Right. It can't eat the leather cover. Iborisema, or another possibility. Anyway, Rashoi Balabais, Lahat of Kia Omer, Lifna Behema Me'ikra. That's why I skipped a couple of lines here by mistake. The Braisa just said, Rashoi Balabais, Lahat of Kia Omer, Lifna Behema, he can untie a bundle of straw, Kadishalai Tilcham, and Adisha Harbe, so it doesn't eat very much of what it's threshing. The Gemara had assumed that you're untying it to cover the grain, but the Gemara says, no, Shiny Hocha, Shiny Hossam, the Ka'ochel. The fact is, at least it is eating. Iborisema, Rashoi Balabais, Lahat of Kia Omer, Lifna Behema Me'ikra. It doesn't mean to use it to cover the grain. It means that he's going to use that straw to begin with. He's going to give the animal a bundle of straw to eat. That way, by the time it comes to the threshing, it's going to be full already and it's not going to want to eat anything.
So that was saying you're allowed to do.
So therefore, so the Braisa will be saying that. Doesn't necessarily mean that we can prove from that if you cover the grain, that now you should be allowed to muzzle the animal. Not necessarily. So the fact is, all of these questions are left as a suffix. The Rambam Paskins and Shulchan Aruch Paskins on all of them, you're not allowed to do them. However, if you do, you're not allowed to do them as a suffix. But if a person does them, he's not chayav malchus, because you can't give a person malchus on suffix. Okay. Another question. What would happen if you muzzled the animal outside before? So like this, we're talking about, you can't muzzle the animal while it's threshing. So when it's there in the threshing area, you can't put a muzzle on it. Are you allowed to muzzle it earlier, and then you're going to bring it in and start threshing? Mahu show b'disha amrachmana. The pasuk is saying that you're not allowed to muzzle it when it's threshing. V'hola b'disha yu. Here it's not threshing yet. Or jomalei sodesh b'chasima amrachmana. Or maybe the Torah is saying you're not allowed to thresh with the animal muzzled, and that would mean you can't muzzle it beforehand either. So the Gemara says, so Amalei, so Rabbi Simoni answers him, mi beis avicha at alamed. You can learn the answer to that from a din that applies to your father's household. Rabbi Yonason was a Kohen. So therefore, so he's saying you can answer your question based on a din that applies to Kohen. Interestingly, Hagoris Tzionim mentions over here on the side, there is a Gemara in Sanhedrin that seems to imply Rabbi Yonason was not a Kohen, because the Gemara discusses over there whether there was ever a Ben Sora Ramoda, and Rabbi Yonason says, I saw the grave of a Ben Sora Ramoda, and I sat on it. Well, if he sat on it, he can't have been a Kohen. So that would seem to imply he wasn't a Kohen, but here the Gemara seems to be implying he was. Maybe you could say that Yashavti Olav doesn't mean right on it, mean near it, whatever. Anyway, so you can learn from a din that applies to Kohen. The pasuk says, "Yain v'sheicha al teish ato v'necha itach." You, Aaron, and your sons are not allowed to drink wine or sheicha or other kinds of alcoholic drinks or whatever. You're not allowed to drink b'voyachem when you're coming into the mishkan or the Beis Hamikdash to do the avodah. Does that mean b'voyachem or d'osir? You're only not allowed to after you've come in. Mishkan me'ol shori. Does that mean you'd be allowed to drink and then come in and do the avodah? Obviously not. The pasuk makes it clear that you have to be able to distinguish between kodesh and chol, meaning between avodah that was done under the influence, which is posel, which is mecholol, versus which is not, which is kosher. So the fact is, if a person is drunk from beforehand, he's still not going to be able to make that distinction. Therefore, his avodah is going to be just as mecholol, even though he drank beforehand. Ella ma hosam b'shas bi'alote shichus. So no, what it means is just like over there, it means when you're coming into the mishkan to do the avodah, you cannot be drunk at that time. So it doesn't matter whether you drank beforehand or whether you're first drinking now. Afkan, the same thing over here. B'shas tochanam, the same thing over here. B'shas disha loite chasima. When you're threshing, there can't be muzzling. So that answers the question. You can't muzzle the animal and then start having it threshing any more than you could drink wine and then go in and do the avodah. So that's that. And we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, with more dinim about chasima and a whole topic in particular about doing things verbally. To what extent is that considered a maisa?
Yeah.